Blog Talk Radio.
Anyway, I'm going to start off this show by telling you that I am reading a book about people who are wounded psychologically. They're psychologically wounded. And in the case of men, the most common problem seems to be absent or brutal fathers, bad dads. These guys have been treated as if they're nothing, as if they're dirt, as if they're not important, and they've been forced to submit to another person's will in a major, major way. So when they grow up, they feel a need to assert their superiority over other people. So they don't have that terrible experience of weakness again. These people are the alpha males. They are not born, this book says. They're not born. They're made. These people see power as being very important because in their worldview, you're either pushing people around or they're pushing you. And power over others is the only thing that separates the two. But a while ago, listen to this, I was reading a different book that said something different. It was by a woman who let her dog go free at night, and she followed him around on his travels around the city. And she wrote about what he did. Now, he was a medium-sized dog, but she noticed that when he took a leak, he lifted his leg up as high as possible against the post, and she concluded to leave his mark high up there, high on the post, as high as he could, so other dogs would think he was a big dog. This view of the dog suggests that alpha males are trying to protect themselves, just like the other guy said, but it seems to be a natural behavior rather than the result of a wound. Do you understand that? It's a little complex for my audience, but, you know, I think you got it in you. Anyway, something else I read, number three. I also read that some men have more testosterone than others, and this is what makes them more aggressive, and that when women ovulate, they find these men more attractive than others. So that's another reason for being tough, besides being wounded. So I don't know what the cause of these alpha male guys is. You know, the question I'm asking myself, though, let me come to that. It's a recruiting question. Here it is. When you're looking for the leader of a company, do you want an alpha male? In the last 10 years, there's been a lot of discussion, a lot of argument against the top down bossy method of running the show. And I used to think that was because with the widespread dissemination of higher education, the workers know as much as the boss, so he can't lord it over them anymore. It's a big know-it-all. But, you know, Steve Jobs, he led a team of people who all knew more than him, but he was your typical tyrant, and he was very successful. And anyway, I'm going to wrap it up, and I'm going to tell you this. I know one show where you won't find a bunch of wounded men stuck in a psychological pissing contest. And Jerry, what show is this?
This is the Recruiting Animal Show!
I
think another reason why a dog lifts his leg up so high is so he doesn't pee on his own leg. I mean, I don't need to follow dogs around all night in Toronto, but I'm just thinking, if it was me.
Yeah, I got to tell you, when you try to reach super high, that makes it more likely that you're going to stumble. So I don't think your argument holds any water, okay?
Okay, all right. Yeah, well, what'd I know?
Okay, yeah, what do you know, right? You got a dog?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you got a dog. Anyway, but it's a girl dog. Anyway,
it's a boy dog.
Okay, let's go to the
guest. But I'm not concerned about his potty habits, eh? I've got more
going
on.
Let's go to the guest.
But you've got an alpha
male
dog coming up here. You've got an alpha male on the show, don't you, today?
I don't know. We'll ask him if he thinks he is. Mike A. Stringer, are you here?
I am, and before we get started, I would like you to acknowledge that having me, one of the greats in our industry, on the show today is the equivalent of you interviewing an A-list celebrity.
Did you get back in recruiting?
Jerry's a funny guy.
Yeah, okay. Let's go right to it. Mike, your company is called HumanCapitalConsultants.com.
HumanCapitalConsultants.com.
Right.
That is correct.
And here's what you say on LinkedIn. You say you're a recruiter of corporate recruiters and HR people. You recruit corporate recruiters and HR people, and you also do recruitment outsourcing, HR outsourcing, HR consulting, and recruiting consulting. Is that correct? Is that really your business?
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Most of what we do can be broken down into two areas. We go into mid-market companies that have internal recruiting functions and strategies that are broken, and we fix them. Or we go into typically more startup to mid-market companies that don't have internal recruiting functions and strategies and are paying Jerry for every placement, and we implement those functions and strategies
for
them.
I think I was easier to understand. What does that last thing mean? The guys are using – these startups are using recruiters to hire people, and you go in and what do you set up an internal recruiting department so they don't have to use external recruiters. Is that what you just said?
To simplify it, yes.
Okay. Well, to simplify it, you mean to say it in a reasonable way. Come on.
To say it on a second grade level so you understand, yes.
Yeah, that's my level.
I'll take that level.
You know what? The corporate level, all that schmoozy, that just doesn't mean anything to anybody. They hate it. They want to get it just fed to them.
You can tell he's rehearsing his keynote speech to go on tour with these other people on the hot air parade here.
Everything, all this corporate stuff, just let me say it. It sounds like those communist leaders when they used to talk. You couldn't tell what they were saying. Nobody says anything.
Did you just call me a red?
No.
Red commie.
Okay, Mike.
And Jerry, just so I can say it, I'm not going on a tour because you know that my number one pet peeve is people that come on this show that failed in recruiting but yet want to teach us how to recruit.
Your elevator speech sounded a bit fluffy. I didn't know if Bill Borman was listening and you knew that and you're shooting for a gig or what. I didn't know.
I'm going to have Adamo rewrite my LinkedIn profile for me.
Good job.
I told Charlie I would do that for him, and I keep forgetting. Okay, look, why do people use you?
People use us because they don't understand recruiting. There are many founders of companies out there that recruiting is not much more than a nuisance for them, but yet they understand they need to bring talent into their organization. No offense to Jerry and the other third-party recruiters here, but they find working with outside recruiters ineffective and expensive, and they want somebody in their company that's going to do it for them, not an HR lady, as Jerry used to like to use the phrase, but a professional recruiter in-house to bring talent into the organization.
So the comparison to me, the only difference would be that I am expensive and effective rather than expensive and ineffective.
Why did you say that? Why do these guys find external recruiters ineffective?
Yeah.
So part of it goes back to a conversation that we had in Jerry's LinkedIn, or I'm sorry, his Facebook group recently, and that is recruiters that are presenting the same candidate to multiple clients. They have no allegiance. They have no
they're not putting their client first. Oh, no, I'm in charge. Let me get you on that away. I saw you writing about that on Facebook. Look, if I'm a contingent recruiter, and you know what, you're not paying me a nickel. I don't have to be your partner. And if I send someone to you, I can certainly send them to somebody else because you're not paying me. You have no guarantee you're going to pay me. You don't owe me anything, so I don't owe you that much either. Don't complain about me, okay?
That's a good point.
But
even though I still disagree,
then don't come to me and tell me that you want to be my quote partner if that's not the case.
What should I be telling you then? How should I market myself to these losing these losers who in the end have to go to you to hire somebody?
First of all, I don't think that you should be marketing yourself at all unless you've got something to offer. So the only recruiters that I'm going to have a conversation with are recruiters that are coming to me saying, hey, I understand you got this hot Ruby on Rails opportunity. I got a great candidate. Here's his background. Here's what he's looking for money-wise. Is this somebody you'd be interested in talking to?
So you want them to call you up every time you post an ad on CareerBuilder and pretend like they just heard about it through the grapevine, huh? You like that one?
No. You know, first of all, I don't place ads on CareerBuilder, but I would rather have a recruiter market a candidate to me than use the same old tired lines, how they're the best recruiter in town and they're more mm-hmm. skilled than the guy in the office next door and bring nothing to the table. You want to do business with me, bring something to the table.
Okay, so unless if I wouldn't just don't call you up, and I don't say, what if I just call you up, but I don't tell you all those things that I'm the best recruiter in the world, and I don't necessarily have a great client, a candidate right on hand, but I say, hey, Mike, I'm a recruiter, and I'd like to do business with you. It won't cost you anything unless you actually hire somebody for me. I'm competent to, give me a shot. What's wrong with that?
That honesty may get you something in my book, but at the end of the day, something's got to prove that you're better than the 10,000 other recruiters that called me this week. So,
well, why?
To me, that's giving me a good candidate.
Okay, so there's no way to just market yourself to a hiring manager without a candidate in hand. Is that right?
I find that ineffective. Yes. Most recruiters today that are marketing, and I get those calls all the time. Most recruiters today that are marketing, I can't remember the training I went through 22 years ago, who that guy was. I think it was the Morgan Method. It's like they're still reading out of that book 20 years later.
Pete Lefkowitz.
Pete Lefkowitz. That's who it was. Thank you, Jerry. Yep, that's who it was.
To call him Lightweight Petey.
Okay. Lots of people like
I
like
know,
him.
I know.
Okay, I saw him, I think, once or twice myself. Okay, so, Mike, let's turn the tables on you. Do you believe, how do you market yourself to your customers? How do you get hired?
I know this is going to sound cliche, but 80% of the business that we do is referral business.
Uh-huh.
The other 20% is through networking. I do some cold calling, or I should say people that work for me do some cold calling, but we don't call up and say, hey, we're the greatest recruiter. We call up and say, hey, we can show you how to save money on your recruiting, make it faster, more effective, and less expensive.
Can I ask you a question, Animal?
Go ahead.
Mike, how long are you typically with one customer? And in a broader question, do you show up at the customer's office in a 6 or 12 month fashion and really build something from start to scratch or start to finish, or do you just show up and
like that, yeah.
Start to finish?
So, Jerry, when we engage with a customer, we talk about the end of an engagement as we're talking about the beginning of an engagement, and typically the end of an engagement is them hiring a full-time internal recruiter to move forward with what we've started. So the answer to your first question is we had one client that we were engaged with for 6 years. I would say on average it's probably a year to 18 months, and we've got probably 4 customers right now that we're within that time period with. We have one that just hired a full-time internal recruiter after 10 months. So sometimes it's under a year, but a year to 18 months is usually the time period. And, yes, we'll have somebody most likely there on site, not always full-time.
Okay.
If we're dealing with a small startup and they can't sustain a full-time on-site recruiter, we'll have somebody there part-time, and I'll probably have that recruiter serving 2 different customers on a part-time basis.
That was a
okay,
good answer to a great question, Mike.
Okay, yeah, I didn't find it that interesting. And now, your job board doctor already said I was off to a slow start with my speech about the wounded guys and the dogs and Steve Jobs. I thought that was pretty good. Okay, maybe I should have talked faster. I don't know how to please these guys.
But you were talking about me, the alpha male, so it was okay.
Okay, are you an alpha male?
No.
You don't think so, Jer?
Are you an alpha
when
male?
When was the last time you killed something out of pure spite?
Jerry, being an alpha male really depends on what part of the country that you're sitting in. So I can tell you, without even having to think about it, I've never killed my dinner. But I think that if you ask my wife,
straight in the beta male category, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I think if you were to ask my wife or the people that work with me, etc.
Okay,
you guys know your testosterone level numbers. That's the big question. My husband knows.
Here's what I want to ask Kathy and Jim. I want to ask them, just like I concluded my fantastic introduction, was if you're an alpha male, Mike, does that help your business or hinder your business? And if it helps you, how does it do that?
I think it helps by having a level of confidence. So when I go in front of a customer or a potential customer, I'm completely confident in who I am, what I am, and what I'm offering.
And you feel you have to dominate.
And I think if you're not an alpha male, and I think if you're not an alpha male, and you don't go into a business situation being somewhat dominant of the situation and the people around you, you've already failed.
Okay.
So that only works for certain kinds of clients. Luckily, there are enough clients that it works on that it functions well. Alpha is not it's a behavior, not so much a core set of traits.
No, we've got a.
And that's a really good point because
this kind of stuff, do we?
What?
You want to get that behavioral assessment?
Well, no, I think what you're saying is a really great point, though, because I do work with third-party recruiters that come to me with ego, not confidence, and there's a big difference between the two. And the ones that come with me at me with ego can go F themselves, as far as I'm concerned. I'm the customer.
So
that's
what
a good
mean,
all that matters is they get their business. I mean, best recruiters I know are full-on alpha. Like, they're terrifying when you're watching them, and they're full of themselves. But
I
know,
I hate that. I hate that.
But all they have to do is get enough business to bill $1 million a year, and they're happy campers. It doesn't mean that it's right for everyone. It just means that those guys are successful, and they don't care if they piss off 90% of people, if 10% give them big bucks.
Jim,
can I give you an example, Adam, of what I mean between ego and confidence?
Yeah, go ahead. Good.
I had a recent episode with a recruiter, a third-party recruiter I was working with, that sent me a candidate late at night. I looked at the resume first thing the next morning. I wanted to talk to the candidate. I called the guy's office at like 8:30 and said, hey, I want to talk to this guy. Here's my availability. He says, I haven't fired up my computer yet. I said, all right, well, you got a pen, right? You can write down my availability and call your candidate. I said I needed a minute to fire up my computer. And I said, you know what? Don't bother. We're not working together anymore.
Unbelievable. God.
Jim, is that Jim who we're talking? Jim Durbin, the great Jim Durbin, my great friend Jimmy Durbin. I just want to go back to you. Thanks, Mike. That was a good example. But what do you mean when you say these recruiters are scary, they are so alpha? What are you talking about there?
Well, you've met the guys. They have big, booming voices. They absolutely have to dominate every conversation. And they're guiding clients along in a way. It doesn't work for everybody. But, I mean, when you meet an alpha, it's usually someone who's big and strong and they're going to eat you. That's the whole point of being an alpha. That's what people do, which is why if you're tall, you have to be careful. I used to have a boss who was much shorter than me. And Frankie explained to me, she goes, look, you can't be animated waving your arms around because it's terrifying to somebody, even though you don't think of it as such. You have to tone your behavior down based on who you're selling to.
Got to watch it when you're with the Napoleons. Okay, thank you, Jim. Let me go back to
So, Animal, you know one of my favorite shows of yours was when the point was made that good recruiters were able to get laid in college.
Yeah.
I think that too goes back to the alpha male. It's the alpha male
in
that was
90s,
able to get laid in college.
It doesn't count now. Getting laid in college doesn't count now. In the 90s.
All right, well, I went to school in the 80s and 90s, so I'm relating back to my own experience.
Is it easier now?
Women too? Does that count for women?
No.
No? Okay.
If you got lots of dates and never had to put out, that's
yeah.
What you meant.
Okay. Well, you know, we got some alpha women on the show. I mean, like Amy Allen is an alpha woman, and so is Maureen.
Amy Allen can get laid anytime she wants.
Oh my
so
goodness.
So is Sandra McCart. I would say Kathy is a more motherly type of person. Is your mama. Anyway, let's move a little forward. Okay. So you were going to tell us what the cold call to the customers that your company does. I'd like to hear that, please.
I don't do it, Animal. So I don't do it, so I wouldn't be the
don't
best person
to. Don't
tell
me you don't know what your employees are doing when they call up potential clients. I don't believe that for a second.
Move on to the next question. I'm not
show's starting to do all right, and Animal's immediately switching over to tell me your cold call.
Can I explain to you what my sales function is here internally? I do not cold call almost ever. I'm a horrible cold caller. I don't like it. I'm not good at it. I've got people here that do that. They team me up with a conversation. And once I know somebody has an interest in what we do, I then go in and close the business. So,
I'm
a great closer. I am not a good cold caller.
You could go up to a strange woman at a bar. You don't have to be the best-looking guy there, and you can get laid. Or at least you can get, you know, gain some ground where other people don't have the guts. Don't tell me
that. But an A personality cannot be that
adept
all day.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with sales.
But an A personality cannot sit at a desk all day and dial for dollars and leave voicemails and whatever without going insane, and that's exactly me.
Okay.
Well, that's because you have
that
high
one.
Tolerance for risk. This is the problem. All that behavioral assessment stuff you guys are talking about, it's 2,000 years old based on Greek philosophy, and it's a bunch of crap.
Okay.
Really?
It's
Jimmy,
not A
yes,
personalities. It's not
okay.
ENTJs. What it is that's shorthand for saying, did you get laid in college? Did you play in a sports team? Are you tough like me? I'm tough. I survived. That has nothing to do with it. It's what happens is.
And I didn't play on a sports team, by the way. I was the guy outside the field smoking cigarettes.
Okay,
I mean,
Mike.
The point is the different personalities sell to different types of
people.
We're
going to move on. We're going to move on. Okay, Mike. So you just cast aside that question about a contingent recruiter not having to, you know, give exclusive loyalty to you with his or her candidates, or do you demand?
I didn't cast the question aside. I said, if you want to be that type of recruiter, that's fine, but don't call me and tell me how you want to be my partner, because that's not being a partner. That's being a whore.
Okay. Will you work with a whore like that?
If they've got a good candidate, I will, absolutely. I'm not going to bypass a good candidate, but at the same time, I keep a small vendor list at every client where we use external resources, and I feel like I've got some loyalty to the recruiters I work with in that I'll only work with two or three of them at a time, maybe four. So, you know, I want some loyalty in return as well.
Okay, so you don't hire more than one recruiting firm to work on the same job yourself, right?
Usually not more than two or three.
Careful, Mike. He's trying to back you into a corner.
I know he
is.
Adam, here's the thing. The only time we use external resources are when we really want to cast that net for a hard skill set. For example, Ruby in Boston, almost an impossible skill set. I do have three or four recruiting firms that know I have Ruby needs in Boston. If they find me a good person, send it. I'm not working with every recruiter in Boston, but I am working with three or four that know I have the needs.
So the recruiter can't work with more than one client for the same kind of job, but you can work. The employer can work with more
than
one recruiter.
I never said they couldn't work. I never said they couldn't work with more than one recruiter for the same type of job. I said, you know what? Give me a heads up. If you've got a good candidate for me, send me that candidate. Give me the opportunity to talk to that candidate and interview that candidate before you plaster it all over town.
Yeah. Okay. If you had a candidate in Vermont, your recruiter, imagine this. This person in Vermont's got
a recruiter.
Whatever you want to call yourself, a boss instead, I don't know what. But you're a recruiter, and you got a candidate in Vermont, senior person who loses his job and has to take one there in his local area that isn't very interesting. You send him to Maine, the next state, on an interview, and he says he's ready to relocate, but then the offer comes, and he says he doesn't want to relocate. What do you do?
Not much you can do in that situation, but I would have never gotten that far because I believe in the ABCs, always be closing. Every contact I have with a candidate, I'm talking about compensation. I'm talking about a relocation if that's involved. I'm one of those old school guys that's going to call his wife when I know he's at work and say, oh, my God, I thought I called Harry's work number. I'm sorry. So how you doing? So you excited about that move to Maine? I mean, I'm going to work that all the way through. And I also don't make an offer to someone unless I'm completely confident it's going to be accepted.
So it would never happen that at the last minute this person would get cold feet or his daughter just, you know, really laid it on him but so heavy that she wants to be a cheerleader and she's not going to give up that opportunity.
I'm not saying it'll never happen, but I'm saying that I would hope that I'd be able to have had enough contact with him and potentially his wife or whoever through the process that maybe I'd feel some of that come down.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Excellent answer.
So you won't ask for permission to speak to his or her spouse. You'll just get them on the phone. Is that right? I mean, what if it's a woman?
Oh, damn, I'm sorry. I thought I called Harry's office number.
Yeah, well, you know what? You're assuming that the spouse is at home. Are you going to call the spouse's work office?
No. No, I wouldn't go that far.
My Jim is right there. You're living in the 60s or 70s, okay? Okay.
And you know what? The 60s or 70s, I can't really speak until the
right way.
I can't speak until the 90s when I started in this business, but I think the 90s, and I would assume the 80s and 70s, as you said, were a much better time in our business than they are today.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you said you told us that what recruiters are doing wrong is calling up all cocky with nothing in hand and saying they're the best. Is that it, or is there something else they do that you think, you know, they make all kinds of mistakes that you wouldn't make?
I said, and I know you're going to ask me for a specific example. I can't think of one at this second, but I think there's a lot of lack of ethics in our business. I've had situations where, recruiters are working me for a higher salary, for example, because they want to earn a higher fee. And my favorite line when I'm interviewing a candidate from a recruiter is when they say, well, the recruiting firm told me that I shouldn't discuss salary with you. And I love to reply to that and say, well, the recruiting firm's not the one hiring you, so what are you looking for? And oftentimes, and I guess this is how people are trained in this business these days, but oftentimes if somebody tells me they're looking at for 90, the recruiting firm probably told me 110.
Mm-hmm. You don't like that?
No, I don't like that. But yeah, you know what? I am extremely honest in my business dealings. I just had a recruiter was a little annoyed with me because it took me 2 days to schedule an interview with his candidate. And I honestly replied to him and said, your candidate has very little likelihood of getting hired here. However, the hiring manager liked his educational background, so he wants to meet with him. But the other candidates I had to schedule interviews for were a higher priority, so I'm sorry it took me a couple of days to schedule your interview. I'm very blunt and honest in my communication, and I expect that from the vendors that I work with.
And if you hire recruiters, have you ever hired a recruiter to work on a contract for yourself or your client and you were disappointed with something, the results?
Absolutely. In fact, I'll tell you that when I was really full-time on the agency side years ago before I started the company, I had a recruiter that worked for me that was 100% the best recruiter hands down I'd ever worked with. Candidates loved him. Clients loved him. He filled recs like crazy. I hired him the first contract recruiting gig I brought in the door, I hired him on, and it was a complete disaster.
Why?
That particular, and I learned a lesson from him and a few other people, but that particular gig was remote. I let him work remotely from Las Vegas, and he just could not handle working from home. I mean, I think there's a lot of people that they're great in office, and you put them in a remote situation, and they just can't swing it. And that was his situation. So yeah, absolutely. I've had even unknown contract recruiters I've hired that I've been disappointed in. I mean, I had one recently who we stay very involved in the engagement.
Start naming
that we have.
Some names so up in here.
I'm not naming names.
Throw some
but
names
very,
out, man.
No, it's not.
We stay
cool.
Very involved in engagements from the perspective of pipeline management and communicating with clients
naming
or whatever.
I don't think you do it about people you know.
Sure, I do. Animal.
Okay, you know, why can't someone work remote? I can't understand that. If he's good at his job, I mean, what's the difference working from home?
I would say in this situation, it was somebody who – I'd be trying to call him for 2 or 3 hours in the afternoon, and I'd finally get him on the phone, and he'd say, oh, it was a nice day. I took my kids to the park. Or, you know, I would call him for some reason, and I'd hear his kids screaming and yelling in the background. It was like he could not take his job seriously.
And what made
him
such a good recruiter? I mean, let's move up. Let's move faster. People are getting angry at me. They're dropping off. What made him a good recruiter to begin with?
The guy had no fear of the phone, and I think that's the number one success factor of an agency recruiter is that they don't have any fear of the phone. This guy was a monster, but he also had the personality that people just loved. People wanted to talk to him.
Yeah, the judge is talking to Kathy while she's listening to the show. Thanks
Kathy.
I was going to say, what was that?
I tried to talk.
Cut me off.
No,
go ahead.
Okay, when you guys were talking about whores and getting laid, and I'm like, you know, there are female listeners listening to your show. And you know what? It wasn't Mike. It was you and Jerry.
Me?
Mm-hmm.
Jerry, how dare you?
You want to
I wasn't talking about whores and getting laid. Roll the tape back.
Our guest brought that up. You know, the job board doctor was always also complaining, oh, what's this, the Dr. Animal sex show? I didn't bring that up. He said that was his favorite show. The guest wanted to talk about it, okay? The guest wanted to talk about it.
We were calling him out and saying it was bad.
It doesn't bother me because I love you all, so it doesn't really bother me. I just had to say hi.
Did it bother your husband?
Yeah.
No, it didn't. He's out in the water surfing right now. I'm at the ocean.
Okay.
Well, that's good.
You know what? This is a great example of the way that I feel about people in general. I am who I am, and I don't hide who I am, and I don't try and change who I am. So if you don't like me, if you don't like being friends with me, if you don't like doing business with me, there's a million other people out there you can like, be friends with, or do business with. I actually have a conversation with every person I hire about my personality. I once had a recruiter leave me who was a pretty high performer, but he needed that daily attaboy. How many placements did you make this week? All right, good job, attaboy. And that's just not my personality. I try, but I'm just not somebody who, listen, if you work for me, I expect you to make placements. So I don't give an attaboy for doing your job every day.
How are you doing on the show so far?
What's
one
that?
Thing, Mike, I can say
how am I doing
about
on the
you?
Show so far? Is Animal doing a good job?
Hey,
the scores that I get on the after show will not affect my life one way or the other.
Mike, talking about the one-minute manager where they tell you to find people doing, catch people doing something good, he's not that kind of manager, okay? Just
I am not that kind of person,
no. Okay.
But Mike, as crude as he can be, and as, you know, I love the feud between him and Jerry, is probably one of the most honorable guys I know. I mean,
right.
He really is. He's a great guy. So
that's a bit over the top, Kathy.
Well, so are you, Jerry.
Is that because he didn't say it about you, Jerry?
No, Jerry is. You don't.
Okay, Mike, you train a lot. Mike trains junior recruiters, Kathy, and I'm wondering what is it that he thinks are the most important things they should know. And I got one other question. This guy that who was a fantastic recruiter who couldn't work remote, you said he was had no phone fear, but he had the kind of personality people liked. What kind of personality is that?
He was way more of a kiss ass than I am, I'll say that. I mean, you know, he was somebody who sort of told you what you wanted to hear and yeah, that's a great idea. Oh, that's so wonderful. Oh, this is the greatest company I've ever seen. You know, I'm not that
kind of smarmy, though, isn't it? Disingenuous.
Yeah, but you know what? People like to be complimented, and he always had one in his pocket.
Okay. Okay. So with junior recruiters, the people, the new guys you're bringing on, what is it? What are the most important things that you try to teach them?
I try and teach them not to have a fear of the phone because, again, I think that the most important thing, the most important trait that a recruiter can have is not being afraid to pick up that phone. And if that's to call a candidate, if that's to call whoever it is, to be detail-oriented, but to be able to look at a resume in about 45 seconds and know that you want to talk to that person, and to be able to think on their feet. I think that many new people in this business can fail because they can't think on their feet. You got to be able to think on your feet. You got to always be closing, and you got to not have the fear to get on the phone and say what needs to be said.
How do you get them over the fear on the phone?
So
throw them in the deep end.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I just had a recruiter within the last 6 months that I've been training. One of the first things I did was put him through Shally's training. So once he had gone through Shally's training, he got on the phone with me, and he would listen into my calls. It would be a three-way call, and the candidate would know he was there, and I would start to involve him in the conversation. And then one day we had a phone screen schedule, and I said, guess what, you're doing this one. And then I listened in on his calls for a while, and I knew he could think on his feet, and I knew he knew what to ask, and I knew that he knew how to do it right up to the client, and now he's going. So
okay, phone screens are not scary. It's cold calling that's scary.
They're scary to some people, Animal.
Mm-hmm.
You just ask a bunch of
questions.
You're
going to take a 23 or 24 year old kid and put him on the phone with somebody that's got a vice president title. Don't tell me that person, that young kid's not going to be intimidated.
How is that 23 or 24 year old kid going to? How do they assess the vice president to see if the person's a good candidate for the job?
With a script.
No, I don't use scripts. I never use scripts. In fact, I rarely ask a question that might be construed as an interview question in a phone screen. For me, it's all about a conversation, and I feel like in a conversation, I can get the information I need. If there's something that I'm missing at the end, I will ask a specific question. But for me, it's all about a conversation that starts with looking at a resume and trying to find that common ground. I talked to a guy recently that was heading up his yacht club, and I happened to be a boater. And he had it on his resume that he headed up his yacht club. So I started off that conversation with 10 minutes of talking about boats, and then we started talking about his job. So no scripts over here. In fact, I can't stand when a recruiter calls me with a script.
You've got to go through a checklist of the person's skills, and is that essentially what your guys do on a phone screen?
I think you can learn anything you need to learn on a phone screen by asking two questions up front. Tell me about your company. So you work for ABC Company. What does ABC Company do? What types of customers do they work with, et cetera? Get that information out and tell me about your job there and shut up and let them talk and ask questions to fill in any blanks.
And how do you assess – how does a junior person, a 23-year-old girl, young woman, assess –
It was a man, by the way.
Okay, well, it doesn't matter, the young man. How does that young man assess the 40-year-old VP who's got a lot of business experience and this young person doesn't? If he or she doesn't know what, you know, the VP does, how does he assess the answers he's given in the screen and say, Mike,
well, first of all, he should not be on that phone call unless he understands 100% of exactly what the role is that he's recruiting for and the qualifications that we need to fill that role. But again, tell me about your company and tell me about what you do. And if there's anything missing in those blanks, if there's somebody...
Does anyone else think that Mike didn't answer the question very well? I don't. You said nothing, Mike. My listeners can't take any information away from you about a phone screen based on what you said. I said, how can this kid who doesn't know much about business, who's got a job description, get on the phone, talk to the person, and decide, you know, make a recommendation to you, yes or no, for this candidate?
Would you not agree that there's a difference between a job description and a thorough understanding of the role? That's how I answered the question. I said that 23-year-olds should have
language.
A thorough understanding of the role.
Yeah, say it in Greek language.
Are you not a recruiter?
Don't sidetrack me.
Animal, you're a recruiter, so do you not understand what a thorough understanding of a job description or of a role means?
I don't understand.
Hey, Animal, here's an update. I've had three people message me that they've bailed on this show. I don't know why. Well, I do know why, but I don't want to say.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead and say it, Jerry, because now I'd like to know why I'm not a good guest, so go ahead.
You are the kind of recruiter – hold on. You are exactly the kind of recruiter that you yourself can't stand.
Oh, that's awful. Terrible.
No, that's fine.
Wow, how is that?
I don't know, man. That's just the word I got. I can't tell you from who. I never name names, and I never encourage anyone to name names.
Why?
That's terrible.
I am exactly the kind of recruiter that I can't stand.
That's the feedback.
You're not giving straight answers, Mike. You're not. Hey, on no other show, Mike said when he comes on my show, he doesn't feel he has to plan on you know being a good guest. But when he goes on Drive Through HR, he stays up all night trying to figure out what he can say that's interesting. But I got to tell you something. On that show, they're not going to say that wasn't a good answer. You're trying to evade it. You don't want to answer the question. I'm telling you that, okay?
Animal, I prepped for this show 3 weeks ago.
Tell me what the difference between a job description and fully understanding the role is. I don't know.
A job description is going to say bullet point, bullet point, bullet point. A full understanding of the role is a conversation with the hiring manager. What is this person doing on a daily basis? What are their goals? What are their quotas? Tell me about the other people in the department. What is the corporate culture? On and on and on and on. It's a conversation with the hiring manager. It's not just five bullet points on a piece of paper.
Animal, you know that. You know the kind of crap that you get from HR departments. Their job descriptions.
It's all boilerplate.
They don't even talk about the job. It's just a list of what the person better know. Well, how's that a job description? That's like a list of ingredients for a recipe, then they don't tell you how to cook it or what's going on.
You know,
most HR job recs are lame.
Yeah,
don't you think so? With a junior recruiter, you can say to them, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, and I'll probably be beat up. But if they don't understand it fully, they can just say to the candidate, "Look, I'm new to this niche. Can you please explain to me? Bear with my ignorance. Can you please explain to me further what you do?" And that's how you learn.
I think to some degree you can have that conversation, but I also
think that candidates have been hearing
that.
Okay?
I wouldn't say it, but I'm saying a junior person could say it. But I think the candidates have been hearing that for 25 years, and they're probably a little sick of it. My first job in this business was with Aerotech. We had a flight to Maryland to Baltimore for 2 weeks of training. We had a flight to Baltimore for 2 weeks of training when we started the job, and cold called people out of a database that were called every 2 weeks when the new training session came in. That heard the same spiel.
That has never happened.
The problem is now people aren't asking the new recruiters to pick up the phone and call. They're just emailing them.
And one of the first things that I ask a candidate that comes from a recruiter is, you know, what did Rebecca Sargent tell you about this role? Because often, not often, 30% of the time, I find that an external recruiter has never even had a conversation with the candidate. They've exchanged emails and sent me a resume.
Yeah. It's hard to believe, but true.
And the
how does that even work? How does that even work at all? I don't get the breakage on that.
They're doing sheer numbers.
That's a lot of contractors.
It is,
and it works.
It works,
and it works if I don't catch it. In other words, I wouldn't know unless I asked the candidate. What did Rebecca tell you about the role? If I didn't ask the question, I might not even have ever known. And Rebecca, I'm not picking on you. I'm just using you as an example. I may have never even known that Rebecca never had a conversation with the person.
Our clients aren't expecting it either, though. You know, the clients have just been trained so badly now that when they get a candidate, they just assume that the recruiter hasn't done their job. You know what? Because we have so many new people in the industry and we're all being painted with the junior recruiter, it doesn't matter if you've been here 25 years or 3 years.
I thought we'd lost numbers again, and it hasn't really grown, which is why everybody's so busy. But
let the recruiting animal get in for a second. For the last 15 or 20 minutes, I've been trying to find out how to do a phone screen, and I got Kelly Blockdyke, I don't think she's ever called in once, but she always gives me feedback. She says having to deal with an ignorant recruiter who's doing a screening is painful. I'm saying, how does the ignorant recruiter, and I've been ignorant many times because I don't understand the jobs that I'm working on. I just go with a description of the position, and I have a checklist. And you know what? Lots of times I just have a feeling about the person. Yes, he says he can do this. He described a certain job where he was doing that. It sounds, you know, reasonable or plausible. I like his personality. I think he's worthwhile. But I was at the recruiting unconference a couple of weeks ago, and I led one. I asked people, I said, rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 5 for what kind of recruiter you are. One guy said, I'm a 5. I said, why? He said, I'm a chartered accountant, and I'm recruiting accountants. So when I talk to them, I can assess them. I know what they do, and I can see if they're telling me all the right stuff. The average recruiter can't do that on a phone screen. Mike, can I tell you the average recruiter's mistake in that situation?
Here's the average recruiter's mistake in that situation. They pretend that they can.
Animal wants to make it seem like he knows everything that he's talking about. That's not a recruiter's job, Animal.
If I'm talking to somebody who's a Ruby on Rails developer, I'll start that conversation by saying, I'm not a technologist. I cannot sit down and develop Ruby on Rails. This is more of an HR screen. I want to get a little idea about your background. I may ask you some technical questions around the languages that you've worked with and the technology that you've worked with, et cetera, but I will not be rating you or judging you on your technical skill set because I don't have it.
And, you know, I'm going to jump in here. One of the biggest problems that junior recruiters are doing right now is they're not interviewing for candidate control. So, in other words, they're going in, they're asking a question, and they're getting the right answer instead of the correct answer.
I don't think candidate control exists anymore. The Internet pretty much did away with that because at the end of the day...
Second time he said it.
He thinks he can say whatever he wants on this show.
Right. You can't push the rules here, Mike.
Listen,
Animal had to beg him to come on, so I think Mike thinks he's got a little more leeway than usual.
Thank you, Amy.
That's what you're paying for.
Candidate control does not exist anymore because of the Internet. When we first started recruiting, and the Internet was not what it is today, we could be an exclusive door into a client. That doesn't exist anymore. If you refuse to submit a candidate to XYZ client, that person could jump on LinkedIn, find out who the director of engineering is at that company, and call them themselves.
Yeah, but so
yeah,
be
I want
it.
To go back to
that's
something
that's
Gary
not
said.
What you worry about.
Okay, go ahead.
Hold on. Let's back up here. candidate control is understanding the candidate well enough to know what they're going to do in any given situation.
But isn't that really just candidate understanding?
Yes,
there is no
control.
I mean, let's ditch that word, can we, people?
All right.
Can we start talking about how ethics don't exist in business?
They don't.
Mike,
we learned that last week.
This is your interview, not mine.
Anybody tweets out that was my statement, I do not believe that statement.
Dude, I've been so refreshed since I learned that. I mean, I've been all caught up in my own set of standards and rules and integrity that hearing that ethics and business have nothing in common was
Okay,
listen, I want to ask Jerry a question. I have to back up myself. Jerry,
yeah,
you said
about
the recruiter, the recruiter who's doing the screen does not have to know everything. That's
not really
his or her job. Well,
not
now,
really.
What is the job of a recruiter doing a screen then?
I think it's to establish whether someone's interested in going further. And if we're talking about a junior recruiter, certainly they're partnered up with somebody that is making more of those decisions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can't the junior recruiter say, hey, you're going to be talking with the guy that I work with. He's far more dialed in with this customer and what this job is than I am. I'm just here to talk to you about whether you might have a little bit of interest, what your background is, and seeing if we can schedule a time for you to talk to him.
Okay, so
the recruiter I used as an example earlier, after 6 months, I'm still on almost every call with him. So if it's an entry-level, low-level type role, I let him handle those calls. If it's something more senior, I'm on every call. I let him run the call, and I step in when I need to.
Yeah.
Okay.
You give him feedback, Mike, and how do you do that? I mean, do you take
No, let me ask a different question first. I want to know how the screener makes a recommendation. How does the let me ask Jerry first. So, Jerry,
that's an easy answer. You're assuming that the recommendation is this customer needs to hire this lady. No, the recommendation is, hey, we need to move this guy up the line. Here, Animal, you talk to him.
Right.
That's
supposed to be doing. Why, Jerry? Why do you want me to talk to him?
Because you know what you're doing and I don't? Isn't that okay? Learning this profession?
Why aren't you ruling the guy out, Jerry? Why are you putting him forward to me?
Well, all of that.
If I'm recruiting for an accountant and the guy says he's an engineer, I'm going to go ahead and rule him out. If he says he's an accountant and he's, like, asking me questions, that tells me at a base level, this guy wants to hear more. And if you're pissed off that I'm putting somebody on your desk that believes they're qualified and wants to hear more, then that's your problem, not mine.
No, it isn't, Jerry. You're supposed to supply a short list.
What are you paying me for? What are you paying me for?
Jerry's right.
If I could step in,
I'll answer the question.
I'm absolutely right. God.
Not only is Jerry right, but one of the things that we learned our first day on the job as recruiters 20-some years ago was how to do a proper write-up to a client, and that also seems to be something that has disappeared from today's recruiting. So
you're right.
The answer to every one of your questions is in that. Yeah.
Seriously,
the answer to every one of those questions, Animal, is in the write-up. And I make a recommendation that somebody should interview, but I don't tell them they need to or they have to.
I just started recruiting, okay?
When I do a write-up, is I think this is a great candidate because here are the potential red flags.
Okay. Jerry, go ahead.
No, I mean...
Alpha male.
And now, an example would be...
I think that could be underestimated.
A true alpha doesn't get argued with.
It's just like when you go fishing your first couple of times, you know. All you know is that you've got something on the line. You don't know what it is, okay? That's what you want your junior recruiters to do. Why are you so upset that they're not making hiring decisions in their first couple of months on the phone?
What about a senior recruiter who's also working on a job that, you know, he doesn't specialize in?
Then he's not a senior recruiter. What do you mean?
Well, on the corporate side, we're always working on positions we've never worked at before, but I would say that if you're senior enough as a recruiter,
you have a good understanding of the
role that you're working on. You can look at a resume and say, yes, this is somebody I should talk to.
No, I should not.
If he's working the counter at 7-Eleven and he's applying for a software engineer role,
you know,
I'm probably not going to have a conversation with that person.
Animal, you think that you get paid to make hiring decisions, man.
Yeah.
You get
you're not hiring anybody. You are presenting candidates to your customers that you feel they can have a reasonable shot at doing the job. They also, based on their resume and what they've talked to you about, they say they can do the job. They want to interview for the job. They're within the salary range. What? God.
You know, you should start calling yourself the sloppy recruiter. I'm not going to give you good guys, just guys who are interested and seem to be in the ballpark.
That's
what you're
you
saying.
You say a lot of stupid stuff, but that's on the top of the list.
That is.
Animal, didn't you ever have a person quit within your guarantee period and have to say to the client, listen, I didn't make the hiring decision, I made the recommendation.
You know what? I got to tell you, if somebody quits, it looks pretty bad for the recruiter, even if he or she. I had a problem like that, but what happened was the hiring manager went against my recommendation. I said, this other guy, Fousey, is a fantastic hire. Don't go with the guy you want. Don't go with that guy.
Let me tell you something. You weren't making that recommendation based on their professional qualifications. It had to be based on personality, cooperation, all the people.
How big your fee was going to be.
Because you did not assess whether an accountant could or could not do a job or an engineer. No way did you do that.
And you got to be talking about 3 years ago because that's the last time you made a placement, right?
No! Thanks, Mike. Yeah.
Boom.
Anything else to discuss?
I don't know if I should bring this up, but I'm working on some positions right now where I have they're so high level, I have no understanding.
Oh, you need to quit now, Kathy.
Well,
you need to quit.
You're an animal. You're not qualified to work on that role.
I know, but I'm acting as a junior recruiter, basically, just making sure they have the minimum qualifications and passing them off to the senior person. You know, and that's the way I'm going to learn.
And I think after 20 years in this business, you get a gut for it, too. You know, you kind of, in the beginning, you know, 22 years ago when I started recruiting, it was pretty easy for somebody to BS their way through a phone screen with me. But, you know, I think I've gained a gut over the years beyond the fatness in front of me that tells me
that's
if somebody's being truthful or they're trying to BS their way through a phone screen.
Right.
And being able to understand, you know, do some research to understand what the position requires.
If you don't fully expect the candidate that you're talking to know way more than you do about their career, you don't even know what our job even is.
True.
Ridiculous.
And, like, I do a lot of sales recruiting, for example, and if a salesperson is telling me they made $300,000 last year, my next question is going to be, can you send me W-2s? I want proof of that. And if they sputter, you know, they're BSing. And if they say, yeah, what's your fax number? You know, they're telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're dead. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mike, what about
referrals? So go ahead, Adam. Try and put me in another corner. Go ahead.
Are you good at getting referrals from candidates, people you call?
I think I'm very good at it. In fact, I have a candidate right now who I talked to who's in Colorado for a sales position I have there who – clearly was not qualified for the role, but had never heard of the company that I'm working with. I spent about 40 minutes on the phone with her, talking to her about the company and the position and the opportunity and all of that. And she said to me, I'm more of an account manager right now. I'm not really a cold caller. I'm not saying it's something I wouldn't do, but give me a couple of days to think about it. And I thanked her for her time, and I said, you know what, let's have a conversation on Thursday. At the end of the day, I know I'm not submitting her for that role. But on Thursday, my gut tells me she's going to call me back and say, you know what, I don't really want to move into a cold calling role. And the first thing I'm going to do is, who do you know in Colorado?
And? Did you get – I want to know. Tell me about a time you actually got referrals, or what percentage of the time that you ask for referrals do you get candidates referred to you? What percentage of your placements are made by referrals from people you didn't know before you asked them?
Many recruiters find this hard to believe, but I have made the most referral hires, those referrals coming from people that I've not hired at a company. And that's all about candidate experience, which is something that we haven't talked about
right
yet. But if you treat somebody well through the process and they don't get hired and you're very open and honest about the reason why they didn't get the job, and then you ask them, who do you know that's a little more senior than you, you'll get names.
Yeah. What if the reason is they don't like they think you're too fat or they don't like your personality or something like that?
They think you're too fat?
I've had it. Yes, I've had it. Okay? So what if that's the reason? Are you straightforward about that?
I've never had a client tell me they didn't hire somebody because they were too fat, although I guess I have had situations in sales roles where they said they didn't have the corporate appearance or corporate image. But I usually bring it back to culture. I'll just tell them they don't think it's a good cultural
okay.
fit.
So enough, something nice and vague. That's what you call straightforward, right?
I'm not going to say, hey, listen, you got a fat ass they weren't interested in yet. No, I'm going to tell them that, listen.
That's what I call straightforward. You're saying I'm not straightforward. I understand. Okay. And so
you can be straightforward with somebody without hurting their feelings and being nasty and rude to them.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
I had a little bit of smoothness that is hard to come by.
Once you give them this oblique answer, evasive answer, that warms them up and they just want to throw names at you. Is that what you're telling me?
I'm not saying they want to.
He gets a rapport going with them. He gets a rapport going with them for, you know, days or hours or whatever, and he gains their trust and respect. That's how
well,
he
that's
does
a good
it.
I'm going to say that if somebody's going
through
the interview, if somebody's going through the interview process at one of my clients, I would say on average I probably have 10 conversations with them through the process.
Okay, but let's not take that kind of person. What if it's somebody you call off a call sheet, and once you start talking to them, you find, A, they're not interested, B, they're not suitable. You have to talk to the person for 3 or 5 minutes. Are you going to get a referral out of that person?
Sometimes, not as often as somebody you've gone through the interview process with.
So you're only good at getting referrals from your own candidates who strike out. Is that what you're saying?
I didn't say that. I said I'm good at getting referrals from people I have a relationship with. If you spend 3 to 5 minutes on the phone with someone, you don't have a relationship with them.
Yeah, but that means you're calling a long list of people, and so you're hoping to get referrals from the people who aren't interested or aren't suitable. That's really difficult. Just you're saying the truth. It's difficult. It's almost impossible. Is that what you're telling me? When you call
sure.
up, say,
I mean,
who do you know?
You're probably one of
Rebecca
10 recruiters.
Rebecca calls up and says, "Who do you know?" She doesn't say, "Are you interested?" She says, "This is what I'm looking for. Who do you know?" And she says,
"Well, Rebecca works." But listen, Rebecca works recruiting agency recruiters. I think we're more apt to give referrals than a software engineer or a salesperson.
No. Don't think that. Yeah, don't think
Rebecca,
that.
Go ahead. You're going to get the last word in on this show.
I think you should be having your candidates self-qualify before you ask them any questions. So in other words, you should be asking them if this is the right job title, the right industry, and if they have these skill sets. If they say no, then you should be asking who do they know. And it doesn't alienate the person on the phone, and it doesn't
Can you explain that a little bit? What do you mean by you should be asking, is this the right job title? What does that mean?
Well, basically, when I pick up the phone and I call somebody, I'm not going in after them particularly to headhunt. I'm asking them if they know, you know, do they know a bridge engineer that's working in New Mexico that can work, you know, over, I don't know, canyons or something like that. If they say that's me, the candidate is self-identified. Then I can have a conversation with them.
So you're just calling somebody, asking them who they know then?
Pretty much. And even if I have their resume in front of me, I'm doing that.
Well, that goes back to the Lefkowitz thing, you know, from 20 years ago. I used to send that email saying, "Can you help?" was the subject line. And then when they got into it, "I'm recruiting for this, this, and this. Who do you know?" hoping the person would reply back and say, "I can do that." But you know, that's kind of old school. I don't work that way anymore.
You should. It's a better way of working.
I think it's a great idea.
Okay, you guys can talk about it in the after show. Mike, we had to put this off for a long time, but I'm glad you came on because I had a nice time talking to you. Right?
I am sorry I wasn't a good guest based on the Twitter feedback Jerry's talking about.
I'm
sorry,
you were. Mike Gatefringer, thank you.
Wow, what a show.
I thought that was a great show.
Why did you think it was great?
Because we really talked about recruiting and methodologies. And, you know, I learned something from Rebecca. You know, I just think everybody had great points.
Well, that is what we're here for.
Yeah, it was one of the first shows, I think, in months that actually dealt with what we do.
I think that's the kind of format he needs.
Yeah. It was great.
Yeah, I think you need more senior recruiters on there that are willing to talk. and have these conversations. Yep.
Rebecca, you next. You would be great.
I was already on 2 weeks ago, two or 3 weeks, or a month ago.
Oh, I missed it.
Yeah.
Shoot.
I'd like to put Jerry in the hot seat and see what that looks
like.
I
was just going to, that would be a good one.
You know, I'm no good with the, tell me your cold call, tell me your stuff, because I believe a master recruiter, and I'm not saying I am. I'm just saying I aspire to be.
Are you a black belt recruiter?
No, but every.
Are you a LinkedIn certified recruiter?
every single scenario takes all of your skills to know how to do whatever it is that's the task in front of you, and it's never the same, usually.
Yeah.
So,
but you do have a baseline that you use. There's something you do every
day. I mean,
I think what you and Mike have in common, as much as your adversaries, is that you're both very down to earth and connect with your candidates in the geographic areas that you live in.
Yeah, that could be.
I
just don't have a standard written cold, you know.
No, I don't
either. That kind of thing, but
most people don't, though. That's the hardest part, right?
Yeah.
It's training. When you hire somebody, it's training them to do what you do because you never write it down. You just do it from feel.
Well,
you've been doing
usually,
it for so long.
Inside of 30 seconds of any conversation with anybody, regardless of what your plan was before you picked up the phone or answered the phone or whatever, you need to be on your toes and just have a state of awareness of what's going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I aspire to have that someday.
Oh, you have it.
I struggle. I struggle. So what would you give
curious.
The score? I need a score then for the show, Kathy.
Because I'm getting ready to leave. I would give Mike, I thought, answered every single question and did well. I would give Mike a 10, and I would give Animal a 10. And
wow.
I would give you a 10. I thought it was a great show.
Yeah.
Great show.
Are you on acid?
I'm not on acid.
Right now. Okay, I mean, everything's just glorious and perfect and wonderful.
It was just because it gleaned a lot of information, and it was just really interesting. I was not bored at all.
Okay, all right. So your hubby did explain to you what his reference was the other night, then?
My hubby he's in the car next to me. He just got pounded by the waves. I sat
Yeah, I just said he explained his the Colts thing.
The what?
Forget it. On to you, Rebecca.
I like the show. I think that we need to have more of these conversations. I'd like to see more seasoned recruiters on the show.
Sherry, I know. I'm sorry, Rebecca. Yes.
Well, go ahead.
Sherry.
Go ahead.
Yes.
No, he did. Yes, he did. And
okay.
I,
be very careful with that phrase.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I will never use it again. Okay.
All right.
Well, somebody tell me what the phrase is.
No.
Oh, God, I can't.
No.
I have to erase it.
No. Okay, Rebecca, you love the show. You wish we had more like this.
Yeah, I would. I think that Animal was might have felt like he was a little bit in over his head, but I think it was a good show. And that's pretty much it. Yeah, 10 and 10 across the board. I really like
that. Wow.
Yeah.
Though our scores are from 0 to 100, by the way.
Okay,
0
well,
to 100. 100. I'm assuming that by 10 you mean 100.
Yeah.
I've made that assumption. Super. Jim, are you still with us?
Yep.
Reading your behavioral psychology books, as it sounds
no,
like
no,
you
I
like to do.
No, I read books. I just apply it in live application at bars.
I got a really good pickup line for you guys if you one day when you guys want it.
For chicks?
What? Because I have to hang up. What is it?
My name's Timothy Oliphant, and by the way, I have $4 million in the bank.
No. You,
oh, it works
you know,
for me.
This is a great pickup process. You just send somebody a drink. And you don't approach them till you're on your way out the door. And then when you're on your way out the door, you stop at their table and you say your story that they you didn't get a chance to come over and say hello, but if they ever wanted to go out for a coffee, they should give you a call and drop your business card and walk out the door.
That's a horrible way to pick up women.
You should try it sometime. I got a recruiter who's doing it all
anymore,
the time now.
That's
how
that's,
I taught him
how
to
just,
recruit.
That's
so.
Like call avoidance. That's
you should try it. Just
to go
try it.
Talk
just try
to
it once.
How about you just catch her eye? When she smiles at you, you walk over and say hello.
There's no element of mystery there. So there you go.
Well, there's plenty of mystery. She smiled at you.
It's been 20 years since I've needed to know how.
Wow. Hey, Jerry.
Yes.
Jerry, it's Steve Nahas.
Nahas.
Yes, sir. How's everybody doing?
Good, man.
Pretty good. Well, my thoughts on the show, and I was eating lunch, so I had it muted, so I didn't.
What'd you have for lunch?
A couple slices of pizza.
Where's the picture? Don't you normally post pictures of your lunch?
Normally. What's normal? What's normal these days?
You guys do Domino's pizza up there for lunch? Hungry Howie's? Little Caesars?
I'm gonna make a point about pizza in a minute here. So, this particular show, obviously, it was kind of like jumping on the recruiter version of The View. You know, and apparently
ooh, that's
ladies,
all I want to know.
Apparently the ladies really enjoyed it. And there was so much information exchange on best practices and such. Maybe that's a good suggestion because, you know, I would agree that a number of the shows in the past, you know, involving especially these CEOs that are living in the basement of their parents' houses that are launching new websites, you know, have been kind of, you know, not very good. But anyway, you know, my whole thing with the beginning half of the show, you know, Mike did outline, I think, pretty well on his style, the way he sets up his office, the way he does things, you know, but my city is one of about five in Michigan that are bankrupt, okay? We have a lot of buildings that are closed up, you know, and it's a really unfortunate thing. But one thing we do have is we have about 10 pizza places. And somehow when little stores are going out of business around here, these little 10 pizza places that don't make identical pizzas, somehow they survive. And they all do something a little bit different. And I just don't – I honestly probably should have jumped in and made a comment or whatever. But
yeah.
I don't think Mike's got much tolerance for the variety of style that different people have in different industries that are successful recruiters. There's zero tolerance there. And there were a lot of comments. If anybody wants to go back and listen to it, there were a lot of generalisms made about, oh, you know, all those recruiters out there, this is what they do, and these are all the things they do bad. And, you know, trying to make an elevator selling pitch to your new potential client about the things that you're going to do differently, I don't think is a trite and cliche practice. I think it's a best practice, to be honest with you, which I'm sure if Mike was on the line right now, he would completely disagree with. But I don't believe you have to, especially in the industry that I work in, which is automotive, I don't think you need to approach a company with a candidate of your choice that you think is going to be a good for that company necessarily, okay?
Well, you heard me disagree with that. I don't like that because that's just the way that we used to do it in the 80s. You would clip out the Sunday ads, and by about Thursday, you would give them a call and say, hey, I heard you're looking for a, you know, project manager for your new product.
Hey,
you know,
can I jump in here? Can I jump in here?
Yes.
I think that, it gives the recruiters a reason to call because they don't know how to have a conversation. They don't know how to pick up the phone and have,
you know,
a conversation.
Sorry.
One of my
very good friends is a, I don't know, top HR person at a pretty big company around here.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one time she was telling me, well, if you call me Monday or Tuesday, make sure you call my cell phone because I put my office on Do Not Disturb. We just put a bunch of ads on Career Builder. And I said, well, what's the scoop there? She said, hundreds of recruiters call me anytime we put any ad on, any of them. My whole day is spent answering phone calls from numbnut recruiters that are calling to tell me about the perfect candidate. I don't have time for it. That's That's the downside of running an ad. It's not the candidates that aren't qualified. It's the hundreds of recruiters who have been trained to give the manager, give this company a call and tell them about a guy that does X, Y, or Z.
But how much of that is third party now? I mean, that could be overseas at this point.
Oh, it's right.
But the whole point is this, is that we have a whole generation of people that don't know how to go out and establish relationships without the client posting an ad. They call because the ad is there. They're driving them. They're driving them to the quick, low-hanging fruit versus the long-term relationships that are going to yield
in
365 days.
That works. I just reached out to a company who posted an ad, a very, very obscure position that I knew was not what they were looking for, and I sent an email to the top executive about it because I know someone who might be a good fit for this.
Yeah.
At the very least, let me talk you through this because you have the wrong job posting. And an email, and he responded, follow up by meeting with the company. So sometimes that's not a bad. I wasn't looking for it, but I saw it. I was like, I know something they don't. And I sent them a note. Granted, I didn't call and say I had the perfect person for you, but basically I did.
Well, see,
okay,
you're using market knowledge and market research. Yeah, I talk over people, especially.
That puts an exclamation point on my point. We also in our office, we also market candidates on an assumptive basis, okay? And in automotive, let's say you run across an engineer that has Japanese language skills. You could clearly easily pick up 3 or 4 new clients in a single day by marketing that candidate because that's such a rare skill, and it works for this industry. But in many cases, and again to go to against Mike's point that calling a client to relay your differences and your and the things that you think you can do. That actually works too, but regardless of all that,
there are so many other ways to get clients than calling ads.
But I encourage all my competitors
to spend their day looking at Career Builder, Monster, and Dice, and calling their sweet little asses off.
Yeah, but back to the fundamentals of the show. Obviously, some people really liked the. So it's just a free-for-all exchange that took place for an hour, okay? But the only thing I was struck with, I just wasn't sure what the overarching topic was.
And his perspective on the industry, man. That's what the show is.
Yeah.
Well, then it was a beautiful thing.
It's no secret that you are the new nemesis for Mike. I shouldered the role for 20-some years, and I've got a whole binder full of, hot points for him, stuff that really gets him going, ways to end an argument. I've got a whole notebook on how to flame war with him and win every time.
I'll send it to you, and good luck. There's a $100 gift card in the mail to your office right now for that list, okay?
Send it to my Facebook.
You need to give us some scores here from 0 to 100.
I gave them both 90s because I dropped my lollipop and, we were just having such a great time chit-chatting for an hour. And, I missed my, the first hour of Rush Limbaugh, which is just killing me. But that's okay. We're all good. Everybody's good. Everybody may go out there and make a placement.
The truth will be out there for you to catch up with in a minute, Nahez. It's still there.
Hey, here my score is 85 for Mike and 75 for Animal.
Why 75?
Oh, yeah, why 75 for Animal?
I still kind of consider those kind of high. I mean, I thought he did a good job, but he was kind of overwhelmed by it, and he was stopping the flow of the thing
several times.
I felt like he wanted to drag things back to where he was from his show prep. But 75 is a good score, I thought.
I'm giving him a 77, an A stringer, an 83. I like Mike's confidence. I like anybody that's got confidence with what I mean. There are hundreds of ways to function and be successful within the talent, recruiting, staffing, agency world. You just have to pick your way, have absolute confidence in it, and really do it all day long every day. So oftentimes there's not really a right or a wrong. I think Mike's got excellent confidence in who he is and what he's doing. That was a good show. Yep. That's what I think. That's what I think. Anybody else would like to offer their opinion on the show? Anybody? Before we get into the absolute complete failure of Obamacare. The Republicans should have just let that thing roll, not made a peep during the whole budget deal and the continuing resolution, all that. They should have just signed all that stuff. And wham. See, I think that took too much of the spotlight off of the abject cluster that Obamacare.gov is. It's unbelievable. And it sounds like you all agree with me.
Well, excellent. I think no matter what, there's no doubt that it's going to have an impact, okay? No matter whose side you're on or whatever, there is going to be a cost difference, okay? And it is going to impact companies that are right around 50 employees, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it will translate to our business. I'm predicting in Detroit, I'm predicting salaries will skyrocket in about a two-year period. In 2014, 2015, they're going to skyrocket probably 20% because we have such a lack of engineers. You can't just grab a bunch of high school seniors, pump them through engineering school, and you know, recoup what we've lost over the last 7 years. You know, so we do not have enough engineers, and you need engineers that speak good, solid English in many ways, and that's a real challenge. So what's going to happen is there's going to be this free-for-all fight that's going to happen, and I think that with companies that are 50 people or more, if they make a decision to drop health care, which I'm not convinced the mass majority of them will, but if they do, it could have a significant impact on all that. If suddenly a family has $20,000 or $30,000 coming out of their paycheck, oh, even $1,000 per month out of their paycheck, more.
Right.
That disposable income is gone, and the first thing they're going to do to try to make up for that is run out and get themselves a different job.
Maybe. There are more people today without insurance than there were before Obamacare on October 1. Who's burning one?
Well, if they are, it's probably illegal.
Yeah. Good luck with your glaucoma.
Interesting stuff, people. We'll see you later.
All right, everybody. Love you all. See you all later. I got to go.
Bye.
Take it
bye.
Easy. Thanks for calling.
Well, we're looking ahead, and the future does not look good for LinkedIn.
Oh, we're looking ahead, and the future does not look good for LinkedIn.